Chapter 40. As they cruised past the pecan orchards and hay farms that surrounded Pecan Hollow, long fields with miles of fences, some new, some mended, Charlie gathered the courage to finally ask about Sandy's car. She'd nurtured a solid grudge against the girl, and she wished nothing good for her. But it didn't sit well with her to be in Sandy's space without her permission.
"Well, it's a long story," Manny said a little loudly,
and he turned down the radio so low she could only hear the hard consonant sounds from the speaker.
"But the short of it is, she wanted me to have it."
"She what?" Charlie said. "This piece of shit is the only thing of any value she has ever had. Why would she give it away?"
"Well, not give, exactly. She loaned it to me. I told her I was trying to see you more, but it was hard walking everywhere, and so on. And I guess she felt bad for me. She was nice enough to lend it to me for a few days."
Charlie worried if she poked at his explanation, it would not hold. So she let it be, for now. She knew Manny and Sandy had been chummy, since he had apparently been confiding in her about how Kit had kidnapped Charlie as a baby. Knowing Sandy, she thought with a shudder, they were probably more than chummy. About a half hour after they'd left Pecan Hollow, Manny stopped at a gas station, a log cabin-style building painted red.
"Need a pit stop?"
he asked.
"I'm good," Charlie said.
Manny disappeared inside the convenience store, and when he came out a few minutes later, he was smiling like he'd won a prize. He grabbed his bag and Kit's gun from the back and gestured with his head for Charlie to come with him. She wondered, with a nervous chill, why he was bringing the gun.
"Quick change of plans," he said, hot magic in his eyes. "Come on. It'll be fun."
Charlie followed him, a whole flock of wings flapping around her stomach, to a zippy tomato-colored sports car with a T-top and fleecy seat covers. He tossed their things in the back and opened the door gallantly.
"We're not taking this," she said, frightened and thrilled.
Manny pinched his brow to a hard line above his eyes that told her she should listen. She sat down in the cramped passenger seat, her long legs folded and pressed to the dash. Manny laughed and hopped in, started her up with a brilliant roar.
"We can't," she said, and whipped her head around to see if anyone was looking.
"Just a little joyride," he said.
"What about Sandy's car?"
She felt genuinely distraught that he would be so careless with something so dear to Sandy.
"We'll be back for it later," he said. "It'll be fine."
He looked toward the station and cut a swift C backward before sliding out onto the main road. Charlie's gut was roller coaster high. The wind spun her hair into a net around her face, and she clawed it and tied it back.
"How the shit did you get the case for this?"
she asked, trying her best not to sound like a sourpuss.
"Just a little sleight of hand while I was waiting in line in there," he said proudly. "There were three guys in line, but only one of them wore cologne. Expensive. Smelled like orange. I knew that was our mark. When he bought a magazine and asked for the key to the John, I figured he'd be in there long enough for us to pull it off."
Charlie couldn't settle on a feeling. She was excited and scared, and also guilty. Guilty for leaving Sandy's car behind, and for having this adventure without her mom. But there was such freedom in jumping in and letting go, being driven away into the unknown. She buried her face in her hands and screamed. And the sound of it blended with the screams of the engine and the highway sweeping by. Manny and Charlie spent the day at a jumbo arcade and roller rink. Nanny pulled out a $100 bill, smooth and unreal, the first she had ever seen. He slid it in the change machine, which spewed a seemingly endless shower of quarters. Manny caught them all in a plastic bag and laughed at the look on Charlie's face. She thought of the change jar at home and how her mom would notice if she'd taken even one quarter for a popsicle or a pack of gum. A glimmer of conscience. A question. Where did he get that money? Appeared and vanished. They played every game twice and spent the rest of the quarters on foot-long hot dogs and soft serve and buckets of soda. Charlie could feel his attention and his care in the way he slipped a fresh stack of quarters in her hand as soon as she ran out, or how the moment she began to feel overwhelmed by the lights and pinging sounds of the arcade, he led her outside to watch the sun drop into the horizon like a big brass coin. When they left, she felt goofy and happy and slipped her arms around Manny as they walked to the car. She loved him for bringing her here and treating her to this big adventure. This was, she imagined, what it felt like to be spoiled. She thought with bitterness about Kit's idea of fun. Beating Charlie at cards after supper. Gunning it over the hump at the railroad crossing. Lighting a bonfire after they'd clear the pasture of branches. Charlie had cherished those times, because they were all she had. But now Manny was showing her how to live. After the arcade, he made a point of stopping at a town and country mall. Charlie stayed in the car and listened to AM radio while he went in to pick up something. When he got back 15 minutes later, he said he wanted to treat her to dinner. She was full from the soda and junk food and didn't feel like eating anymore, but it didn't seem decent to turn him down. They pulled up to the restaurant at dusk. Mosquitoes trolled outside the windows like little ghosts. Charlie kept repeating scenes from the day in hopes she could etch them forever in her memory. Manny turned and pulled from the back seat a white paper shopping bag.
"I got you something," he said, pushing away the hair from his brow. "Go ahead and slip this on. Don't worry, I won't look."
Charlie wasn't used to getting presents. All her life, she had watched the girls from school get dresses, stuffed animals, puppies, and even ponies from their dads. What little Kit had given her had never even been wrapped. She reached in and held up a plain striped t-shirt. She was a little surprised because it wasn't anything special. Not that it was bad. She smiled and put it in her lap and reached in the bag again. This time, it was a plain pair of dark jeans.
"Wow," she said. "Thank you."
She was fearful of breaching the peace between them. "It's always good to have extra clothes."
"Well, go on," he said. "Put them on. Trust me, it's a perfect fit."
She didn't know if he meant to change here, in the car, or in the restaurant. Either way, it was starting to feel weird.
"That's okay," she said. "I'm comfortable in the clothes I'm wearing, if you don't mind."
Manny looked annoyed. He cocked his head.
"Why are you being difficult? Just put them on. I want to see what you look like."
Something sick in her belly told her not to push back.
"Here?"
she said.
"Jeez, what a prude. Don't worry, I'm not gonna look."
He covered his eyes with his hands and made a show of turning around. His greased hair, dark and wavy like hers, had parted in back to expose a bald spot the size of a poker chip. She put the new shirt over her head and shoulders and wiggled her arms through the shirt underneath, then worked it over her head, pushed her arms through the armholes, and pulled the old shirt off through the neck hole. The pants would be more difficult to change modestly. They were in this goddamn convertible, and there were people around going in and coming from the restaurant. She nearly cried, wishing she were back at Doc's house, her mom asleep beside her.
"Do you need a hand?"
he asked, making a quarter turn. "No, no, I got it," she said. She would just have to be quick. "Just please don't turn around." She yanked the pants she was wearing down to her ankles and kicked them off, then wiggled her feet into the new jeans and tugged upward, shimmying to get them on as fast as she could. They were stiff and stuck around her hips, which she lifted high to get the pants the rest of the way up. When they were finally up, she zipped and buttoned them and caught her breath. "I'm done," she said, and hugged herself. Manny turned around.
"My God,"
he said, and looked at her a moment. His eyes went soft and dewy.
"It could be her."
Charlie knew what he meant, and she didn't like it.
"All right," she said, antsy to get out of the car. "Can we go in now?"
He looked at her like a painter checking a canvas. She curled under his gaze, couldn't wait another minute. She put on her boots and opened the little door. At this, Manny seemed to snap out of it. He folded her old things squarely and stowed them in the paper bag, then followed her inside. The steakhouse was one of a chain she'd seen in passing, but Kit could never have afforded to eat there. She stepped inside, and her skin goosed against the crash of air conditioning. The hostess led a winding path through the burnished wooden tables to a short booth with green vinyl seats, a light fixture of stained glass hanging between them. The napkins were cloth, the menus tall and leather-bound, not laminated like the ones from the diner.
"This is real nice," she said. "But I would have been happy with KFC.
"But you're my best girl," he said, "and this is a very special occasion."
Manny didn't explain what he meant, and Charlie didn't ask. After the waiter came and took their drink orders, Manny excused himself to go to the restroom and left the keys on the table.
"Don't run off now," he said,
and disappeared into the back of the house. Why did he leave the keys? She wondered. Was it a test? Why mention her running off? The waitress came by with a 4-part caddy of chopped things: chives, cheese, sour cream, and bacon bits. Thinking it some kind of appetizer, she spun the caddy around and spooned some cheese and bacon into her mouth.
"Cheese, you dummy," said a young voice. Bossy and snide. "That's for the baked potatoes. It's toppings."
It was Lee Prentice, all dressed up in a plaid jumper with a ruffled collar and patent leather shoes. Her speech was thickened by the healing hole in her cheek, now unbandaged. It looked like a bullet wound all scabbed over.
"I didn't know you ate here," said Lee, looking down at Charlie. "We come here every time we visit my cousins in Yoakum. It's our family tradition. I get the fillet mignon."
"It's my first time," Charlie said. "It's nice."
There was a tense pause where Lee seemed to be waiting for an apology. It would be simple enough to give, but Charlie was reluctant to bring it up out of nowhere. Then she remembered what Manny had told her in the car.
"Did you hear about the murder?" Lee said. "Oh, yes. Everyone's talking about it. That's why we're here so early. We gotta be back before the curfew. You know about the curfew, right? Daddy says they'll throw you in jail if you're out past 9.
"Jeez, that's so crazy."
Charlie wondered when she would even be back in Pecan Hollow. Maybe it was because she was far from home, but she was beginning to feel friendly toward Lee. All in all, Charlie could see how she had overreacted, and how scared and hurt Lee must have been to get wounded like that. She felt ashamed for what she'd done and offered an olive branch.
"I'm sorry I stuck you and fucked up your face," Charlie said. "It looks like it really hurt."
"It did," Lee said, and held her cheek in remembrance. Several tables away, in a big circular booth, her parents and four brothers broke into laughter that filled the room.
"My mama said it will strengthen my character, like Barbara Streisand's nose."
She drew a comically large nose in the air with her index finger.
"She said distinctive women have more power than beautiful ones. I'm pretty sure she's just trying to make me feel better, but who knows?"
The girls were silent. Lee eyed the toppings and smoothed her pinafore.
"I'm sorry for looking at your answers. It wasn't very Christian of me. You're so good at math is all."
Charlie smiled back at Lee in her stupid dress. She wasn't so bad. Maybe, she thought, they could hang out sometime. Then she remembered Manny. She craned her head around to the back of the restaurant.
"Hi, my dad'll be back from the bathroom soon. I probably shouldn't be talking to you."
"Wait, that was your dad?"
Lee squatted by the table to get closer.
"But he's so hot," she said, as if it were a forbidden word.
"Ew, no," Charlie said. "Look, can you just go back to your table? I'm sorry, I just don't want to get in trouble."
"Okay, fine, but why shouldn't I be talking to you? Is he super protective of you?"
Lee twirled a ringlet under her ear.
"I wish my dad was like that."
"I don't know. It's just a feeling I get."
Charlie was starting to get anxious that Manny would see them. Why was she so worried? It was kind of weird that he'd bought her a new outfit, but maybe that was a normal dad thing. Or maybe her clothes were dirty and he hadn't wanted to embarrass her. It occurred to her that maybe she should try to call her mom and tell her where they were. Now that she was so far from home, she didn't really want to stay with Manny anymore. But neither did she want Manny to be mad. They had only just begun to get to know each other, and she was mortally afraid of screwing things up.
"Lee, listen, can you do something for me? Can you let my mom know I'm okay?"
"She doesn't know your hair?"
Lee gaped like she had just struck the motherlode of gossip.
"It's kind of hard to explain, but it's fine. Just tell her, okay?"
Charlie squeezed Lee's wrists to cement the message.
"Will you please?"
She nodded eagerly.
"Yeah, I'll tell her. You can count on me."
"Thanks, buddy,"
Charlie said, resolving to talk to Manny about going back to Pecan Hollow after the meal.
"See ya."
"See ya,"
said Lee, grinning, and she wove through the tables to the front door where her family was waiting. Chapter 41 Kit struggled to breathe as she ran from the church house. A current gathered in her throat and she screamed. A dusty wind sweeping the sound across a grove of pecans. She dropped to her knees and pressed her forehead against the warm asphalt. It was shameful of those people to turn down her pleas. They had always attached strings to their kindness. She wished Doc could put a hex on them. And yet, what else did she expect? Shame on her for thinking she could be treated with any kind of fairness. As soon as she found Charlie, they would pack up and leave. There was something batting in her chest, like a bird thrashing around in a cardboard box. If only she could touch Charlie, to tangle that hair in her hands and draw her close. When the numbing came on, it was unwanted.
"No, please, no," she whispered.
The feeling started in her face and rolled down her insides like wet paint. Her hands tingled and cramped before she ceased to feel them at all. She pressed her nails in her cheeks, clawed for a feeling as if she could dig it up. Soon, she felt nothing but a void. When Doc caught up to her, Kit had no idea how long she'd been on the road. Her mind was stunned still. She moved slowly, automatically. The passenger door of Doc's van groaned open and Doc helped her in, gently manipulating each limb as if she were made of glass.
"I can't take it," Kit suddenly said,
her voice sounding as if she were at the bottom of a well. And once her mouth started moving, she found she couldn't stop.
"I can't not know where she is. He can't have her. He can't take her from me. Oh, God, I want to die. Please let me die before I see him lay a hand on her."
"Hush now, hush," Doc said,
her green eyes worried and big.
"She'll be okay. We'll find her, babe."
"You don't know that,"
Kit shouted. To hope was too painful. She couldn't feel her arms and feet. She was crazed with a need to move.
"I let him in. I was weak, and I missed him. I let her meet him, even though I knew he could be dangerous, even though I knew she would love him."
The guilt was too much. She screamed so hard her eardrums popped, and Doc clapped her ears to block the noise. Kit couldn't get a full breath and began gulping at the air.
"Oh my God, the coyotes, those little pups. It wasn't mercy. He helped me kill them to see if I was wicked, to see if I could kill. And then Warbucks."
She winced as she recalled the great heap of the stallion covered in blood.
"That was murder. He did that to punish me, or to warn me."
Doc took her arms, but Kit shoved her back, clawed at the door handle.
"Get back now, Doc. I don't want to hurt you. You got to let me go."
Doc pulled Kit into her arms, her strength completely overwhelming. Kit lashed out and flailed and bit at Doc's hand. She hadn't felt this small since she was a girl. Doc held tight, her arms thick and strong as thighs. Kit thrashed until she was sapped and hung limp in Doc's embrace. Doc turned her around and draped Kit over her shoulder like she was burping a baby. She stroked her back and hummed a sad song. Kit's skin burned where Doc touched her, but with every pass of her hand, the hurt felt more like warmth, and there began a melting within. She hung across the soft, broad shoulder and felt her breath align with Doc's. Her heart slowed to a gentle rhythm. She lost all sense of being separate. A memory burbled up, spring-like, and enveloped her. It had been the end of a hard freeze, the first day of thaw. A scattering of birdsong cheered the air that had hung silent and dour for a week. The grasses, once furry with frost, now hung wet and limp. The sun had burned a hole in the cloud cover, dispersing the frigid fog. Kit had been clearing fallen branches from the yard for firewood. Some were as thick as her waist and 10 feet long, but she'd hoist them over her shoulder and lean forward to drag them to a bonfire in a clearing. Aunt Eleanor had said the labor would come on slowly, feel like gas pains or cramps. She wondered, what with her condition, if she would notice the contractions at all. Instead, they came on like a hot summer storm, suddenly and violently with thunderclaps and lightning. Pain in her body was new to her, a sobering shock. But instead of bracing against it, she followed it, knowing through some timeless medium that this was good for her. It was the pain of creation. She staggered inside, falling to her hands and knees every time a surge came on, and climbed on the bed. After several hours of spasms, she began to quake. She vomited and collapsed, shivering and stripped of all her strength. She felt for the first time that she could not do this alone. Then her baby drove forward, and when she reached down, she could feel the slick top of its head. One last surge of strength helped her rise and try again, fearing if she could not deliver now, they both might die. She squatted and held on to the brass footboard for balance, feeling her hips split by unimaginable pressure and pushed. And a spreading force like the hands of God drew her open. The baby came face up and still ensconced in the caul, like a new foal. She cupped the head in her hands and pushed again with a wild growl and pulled her baby to her chest. She lay back and wept. Such relief and sweetness enveloped her, and all she could see was the child in her arms. She peeled away the membrane and wiped the muck from her baby's eyes and cut the cord with some sewing shears. She lay upon the baby a soft blanket to keep her warm. All on her own, the baby found her breast and began to nurse. They fell asleep together on the bed, breathing as one. She woke up to contractions and saw she was delivering the placenta, just like Aunt Eleanor had said would happen. In the moments after, when she lay the baby in the Moses basket and got up to wash her hands and between her legs, she missed the baby so much she was weeping. She found a pitcher and a cup on the dresser and filled them both with water and set them on the nightstand.
"Drink as much water as you can hold," Eleanor had said.
When she was clean, she wiped the baby with a damp cloth and dried her well so she didn't catch a chill. She wrapped her in a thin blue blanket that had belonged to Eleanor's daughter, Emily, and lay down with her in the old brass bed. The baby was tired, and Kit was too, and they slept there all night and into the next afternoon, waking only to feed. Kit ached from the memory of that sweetness, the way every worry, every memory vanished, and all she could experience happened in the short distance between that baby and her. Giving birth to Charlie had felt like joining the human race. She had finally known love, and it was nothing like what she had felt with Manny. It was awe at seemingly nothing at all. It was what she felt when she was giving, when she heard her baby cry. It was dependence, heartbreak, a kind of rapture. She felt uplifted and bettered for having loved this baby. It all felt like a gift she didn't deserve, but she was happy to have stolen. Why had she smothered these memories? Why had she not bathed in them and let them hold her over through hard times, let her be better to Charlie? How could she have let her daughter convince her that they were on opposite sides when they were the very same? Why had she not told Charlie the story of her birth, how she came into the world and brought Kit with her? She felt as if sucked into a violent current of sadness, bandied about, sobbing, swimming, her tears like a fluid she could breathe. She was scared at first, but then let the salty solution quiet her. The static cleared, and every cell vibrated, liquid vibration all around and within her to her very core. She could see herself then as a child, younger than Charlie and not clever or tough as she had always thought she had been, but as helpless as a motherless pup. When Manny found her, she had been a walking void, gutted and scraped clean. He entered the void and filled it with his perfect smile and made her feel like kin. His attention had warmed her through and through. His ideas had expanded her sense of possibility. He had taught her his trade and let her in on his secrets. She had been so grateful she wasn't going back to foster care. She hadn't realized that he was worse, far worse. Having never known the lasting affection of others, she had not known better than to call it love. Her throat closed up, and she held her hands to her eyes as she remembered, even now, how sweet it was to have someone care for her. She had not been wrong to want those things. So lost and alone, she thought she had found family in a criminal like Manny. She was not his family, or his lover. Until this very moment, she was, and always had been, his prisoner. Only now was it dawning on her that she had been his biggest con of all. With an elegant sleight of hand, he had taken her life, her body, her innocence. He had thrust himself into her bloodstream, put life inside her. And now that he had found her and Charlie, he would claim, or kill, them both. Chapter 42. Charlie fought back drowsiness from her long day of excess.
"We're almost to the motel," Manny said.
She looked at the clock. After 9 o'clock p.m.
"It's so late, though. Do you think we should just call my mom and head back home? I can see your place another time," she said.
She had had her fill of adventure and wanted to end the day in her own bed. Maybe, she thought, her mom would be so glad to see her she wouldn't ream the shit out of her when she got back. He kept driving, squinting into the headlights of a passing car. He checked the rear view.
"I still have plans for us, cutie, but don't worry, we're not too far away."
"Far from what?" she asked.
She felt uneasy when he didn't answer.
"Kit's gonna lose her shit. You know how she is."
Manny flicked open a canister of lemon drops with his thumb.
"Did she ever tell you about how we met?"
He parted the wax paper, took two, and pushed them into his mouth, then tipped the canister toward her. Charlie sucked on the candy, its sour sweetness wetting her mouth.
"She never tells me anything."
The lemon drops crackled against his teeth as he rolled them around with his tongue.
"It wasn't too far from here. I was filling up my car and went in to use the bathroom. When I'm getting ready to go, out of nowhere comes your mama, arms full of shit she'd stolen from the gas station, just booking it."
"What? She was stealing?"
"I just watched. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. She headed for my car and dove in my window to take my lunch, but she got stuck. I had to laugh. It was too funny and so strange. I tried to help by lifting her out of there, but she fought me. She was fierce. I knew right then we'd be good friends."
"Weren't you mad? She was stealing from you. Did you call the cops?"
"Mad? No way. I admired her. Still do. There's something wild about her. I knew I'd never get bored."
"That's so crazy," she said. "How old were you guys?"
"She must have been your age. Well, a little younger."
"Younger than me?" Charlie thought.
She had imagined them at 20, fit and messy and beautiful. Why was Kit alone if she was so young? Who was watching her? Tears pushed at her eyes as she remembered how little she knew about her mother.
"But you were driving," she whispered,
trying to sort through the pieces that didn't quite fit.
"So you were like 16 when you met her?"
"Me? No. I was in my late 20s, at least."
He looked over with a half grin, his face taking on the glow from the dash.
"Well, don't look so scandalized, silly. It's not like we were lovers right then. I waited until she was of age. I'm not a pedo."
Charlie flushed at this last ugly word. The treats, the new clothes, the dinner, these scraps of information were beginning to take shape, but it was so grotesque, so shockingly dark. It could only be seen indirectly as a blurred monster lurking on the periphery. An alligator in the swamp. She sank into the seat and pulled her knees to her chest. Chapter 43. A wild panic clawed its way up Kit's throat. She fought it back and leaned on the accelerator, hands gripping the steering wheel so tight she could barely feel them. Doc had tried to tackle her to keep her from leaving, telling Kit that she needed more time to get aligned or some shit. Kit had fought her off and climbed out of the van and into her truck, tearing blindly into the night for Charlie. The old truck rattled as she pushed it to its natural limits, peeling around dark and dangerous curves. She moved moment to moment because to advance even 1 inch ahead of herself could invite terror, collapse. She rolled down her window to catch a hard breeze. A gusty smell of manure and ant killer whipped into the cabin. She barely noticed the headlights approach and pass her by. Only when the car stopped, changed direction, and sped directly behind her did she shift her focus. The driver lay on the horn, swerving dangerously close, then accelerated and pulled up beside her. Kit braked slightly to drop back and look at the other vehicle, a black Suburban. It veered into her lane and nearly blew off her side mirror. Kit punched her horn and yelled at her truck to go faster, but it maxed out at 80. The Suburban easily matched her speed. Finally, a woman leaned out the window, banging on the door.
Hi! Hi, Kit!
It was Sugar Faye, her hairsprayed bubble barely disturbed by the rushing wind. She pointed to the side of the road.
Hi! Pull over, will ya?
Sugar. God damn her. Kit shook off the sting of fear in her skin and coasted to a stop. She got out and met Sugar at her door. The kids were piled in the back rows and Rob manned the wheel.
Eek! Sorry about that. I must have given you a fright,
Sugar said.
You almost ran me off the damn road, Kit said. I can't stay here. I have to go. Charlie's missing.
Sugar Faye held her throat.
Oh, God, oh, no. Well, that's what I was...
Kit grabbed her by the shoulders.
Do you know something? What's this about?
Sugar waved her hands around.
Yes, okay, hear me out. Sorry, I'm just flustered. Listen, we were down in Yoakum visiting my cousin. She just had her gallbladder or her appendix or something taken out, so I sat with her and brought up some of my kolaches. Anyway, after we left, we stopped for supper at our favorite steakhouse.
Sugar Faye, would you get to the damn point?
Yes, okay. So Lee saw Charlie over there.
She did? Wait, where? At the steakhouse?
Old Steak Tavern. Hang on.
Sugar fished around the glove box for a map and pointed to the spot with a long pink nail.
Look, it's, oh, about 80 miles southwest of here. You can make it in an hour if you really book it.
Kit took the map and traced the route from Pecan Hollow. A woozy feeling lapped against her, an echo of a memory, dispersed and vague.
Anyway, Sugar said, Lee says something just didn't look right. Said Charlie was there with her dad, but that she didn't want him to see her talking to Lee. And of course, she doesn't have a dad, so I felt pretty suspicious about that. But then Lee said Charlie said to tell you she was okay. But of course, that makes me even more suspicious. And I was going to call you when we got home, but then I saw your truck and flagged you down, and here we are.
Kit leaned against her truck to take in what she'd heard. Charlie's okay, for now at least. And she was with Manny. But why? If they were eating out in a restaurant, they weren't exactly on the run, were they? Unless he had nothing to lose. With an awful start, she remembered the restaurant in Galveston with the giant crab. Maybe he didn't want to hurt Charlie. Maybe he was training her. Sugar Faye seemed excited to have something useful for Kit.
Did that help?
Yes, thank you, thank you. I have to go now, Kit said, swiveling toward the truck. Sugar turned her back around and pulled her into a soft, perfumed hug. Kit stiffened at first, but Sugar held on to her and spoke into her ear.
Girl, don't you worry, okay?
She said sweetly. Sugar pulled back and wiped a tear, black with mascara, from under her eye.
I'm sorry about all that in church. Folks were just scared. We are gonna find your baby. I'm gonna get on the horn, call everyone I know to get their asses outside, and start looking. Curfew be damned.
Kit sighed, not wanting to waste any more time explaining that the people of Pecan Hollow would no sooner help her find her daughter than they would skip church on Sunday. Instead, she nodded and got in the truck. If the town did somehow pull together for her, then hallelujah. But she sure as shit wasn't counting on it. Chapter 44. Kit followed the map to the restaurant where Charlie was last seen, her foot never leaving the gas pedal as the night slurred past her. A steady rain of insects slapped the windshield, and the overworked engine groaned. At her feet, straw papers and loose napkins tumbled and bobbed in the stale air that curled through the half-open windows. She could feel the soft weight of her child against her breast, smell the clean scent of her new skin, hear her burble and coo. Even at this distance, she spoke to her with the full conviction the sound would carry. Hang on, baby, I'm coming. When Kit approached Yoakum, the stench of rotten eggs became so intense she had to roll up the window. As she reached for the crank, it occurred to her, clear as a chime, where Manny had taken her girl. The smell of sulfur. The oil fields. He was taking Charlie back to the place where they had made her. All the billboards had been taken down. No May or Elvis or Little Richard to lead the way. But she couldn't miss Clifford's Hollywood Palace. Though abandoned and dark, its sign still loomed over the highway. At this hour, the roads were nearly empty save for a few 18-wheelers punching through the night. She exited, parked by the entrance. There was a spry little hot rod pulled up closest to the stairs. A toy for Manny, she thought. She had been right to come here. She left her keys in the ignition and let down the tailgate as quietly as she could. Then she drew the machete from the bed of her truck and tapped it against her calf, a cold comfort. An abrupt gust of wind cut a high pitch through the cracks in the sign behind her. All manner of vermin were rustling around in the weeds and the walls. Some yahoo had scrawled "Privet Residence" on a bowed sheet of plywood covering a downstairs window. As she approached the dusty, abandoned building, she kept her eye on the purple door with its hand-painted sign. No lights, no sounds. Please let it not be too late. Memories of the last time she had been here rose up around her like a stench. How he had ambushed her on bended knee, deserted her when she turned him down. How she had withered without him, rolled in her own mess, and begged for his return. She was ashamed to revisit that time with a wise mind. And when he finally slipped back into her life, as if he had never left, the way he held himself to her hips and forced himself, his jeans, his very makeup inside of her. Here, now, a new fear emerged. That he had taken Charlie not to hurt Kit, but to replace her. The windows had been boarded up, but poorly. Kit peered through a gap in the plywood. There was a worried sound, and Kit held her breath to hear it. A rustling of wings. It was only the cooing of pigeons. She emptied a crate full of sooty spray bottles and rags and stood on it to see through a long bar of exposed window high above her head. The purple shag carpet had been ripped out to the subflooring. Someone had burned the mattress to its coils, and there was a charred hole in the ceiling above it. In the closet, the cutout of Dolly Parton, now battered and defiled. A camping lantern cast a small, artificial light on the far side of the room. There, perched on the giant purple bathtub, sat Charlie, her thin legs folded over the edge. Dressed in a striped shirt and starchy new jeans, she looked like a willowy version of young Kit. Manny, seated next to her, had his fingers in her hair, like he was sussing out the tangles. At his feet was Kit's shotgun. Kit went straight for the door and busted in. Charlie turned toward the noise, a ray of recognition passing over her face. She wanted Charlie to run to her, but she just turned her eyes away, flat and unfocused. Was she drugged? Didn't seem like Manny's style. His charm was the only intoxicant he needed. Maybe, she thought with a start, Charlie didn't want to be saved. Maybe he simply had her in his thrall. A force Kit knew too well. The idea that Charlie was there of her own free will scared Kit even more than him holding her captive. Kit's heart rapped so loudly she could feel it in her ears and eyeballs and all the nails in her hands and feet. She could not lose herself to this fright. She called upon the numbing, and the fear settled like silt in a lake after a rain. Her breath now smooth and steady, and she could hear every sound in the room. The calm cleared the way for a single thought. Charlie needed her mother.
Charlie, Kit said. I'm here, Charlie. Are you okay?
Manny still had not turned to look at her. He fanned Charlie's hair across her back.
Well, aren't you the clever cat? How did you find us?
Kit tried to keep her voice level.
Now, don't act like you didn't mean to lead me here, Kit said. Clifford's? The Dolly Room? If I found you, it's because you wanted me to.
It's not about what I want, he said. It's what she wants.
Charlie met his eyes and he put a soft hand on her back.
It's okay. Go ahead.
Charlie clasped her hands together.
I've been thinking, she said. We don't get along anymore, you and me. We're like...
She drifted and looked at Manny, then continued.
Siamese twins. We've been stuck together too long.
She wouldn't look at Kit directly.
I've been thinking it's best I go live with Dad.
The words came out of her like cardboard. The words were not her own. Even so, hearing them weakened Kit at the joints. She could not let him win. He would expect her to unravel, to rage, to take Charlie back by force. But he would not let her go unharmed. Then Charlie glanced at her, sharply, briefly, and Kit could see in her features a presence and a cunning she had not detected before. Charlie was not drugged or brainwashed. She was playing along.
Atta girl, she thought with a swell of pride for her daughter. I couldn't see through him, but you can.
Kit set her machete on the floor and stepped over it as an offering of peace. She, too, would have to play along to get closer to Charlie.
I didn't come to take her away, she said. I came here because I thought about what you said.
about us being together. Us three. She winced on the inside. Lying wasn't her thing, and the words didn't sound convincing.
I want to see if we can try to be a family.
Manny's eyes widened unnaturally, feigning irritation.
Don't you see? You're the third wheel. No one invited you here. Go on home.
There was a wounded, flustered quality to his voice. Like he had made up his mind, and now she was complicating things. She probed his eyes, those brilliant blues, ever shifting, and found something in his face, a wanting she would handle deftly. He seemed to want her to beg. She sat down next to him and put her hand on his thigh. He didn't pull away.
I'm sorry, she said,
her voice hoarse and mellow, like that of a child about to fall asleep.
I shouldn't have pretended you didn't matter to me. That was my pride. Truth is, I looked for you coming down the drive every day since I left, hoping you'd come for us.
She tightened her grip on his leg.
Now that you're here, I don't want to let you go.
Manny pulled Charlie to his chest and squeezed Kit's hand so hard it buckled. Charlie froze, her eyes wet at the corners. Kit caught her gaze and subtly shook her head as if to say,
"Don't react. Keep calm. I've got this."
Something glimmered in Manny's heart, the place where Kit had lived. It moved him to feel her come close. He wanted to believe his partner, his muse, was back. How long since she had cozied up to him like that? Had lowered her defenses and let him take over? How long since she belonged to him? His child, his mistress, his slave. A lifetime. And yet he knew he could not trust this Kit. She was biding her time, trying to get close enough to take Charlie and run. She'd say anything for the girl. He stroked the ragged surface of her knuckles, scars he knew. One of them cut from his own teeth, a right hook landed just so. He prayed. He waited. Nothing. Then he turned to his once partner in crime, his only lasting love. Dark dashes for eyes, that sullen mouth, the barely there tits. Skin coffee-toned like his own, but chewed up like an old bullhide. Sure, he had worshipped her once, but her life was over now. Charlie's had just begun.
Stand up, he said.
She obeyed. Then he saw her steal a glance at Charlie, a signal. She would make her move any second. Soon, he would have to kill Kit. And as he imagined holding her throat, squeezing the life from her, he was overwhelmed with fury and love.
Bah, old friend.
He reached out for her with his left hand, the one that wasn't holding on to Charlie. And even as he did, he was not sure if he would caress or kill her. Kit kneed him in the gut, and he doubled over, bringing Charlie down with him. Kit tried to pull Charlie from his grasp, but he held on. The girl bleated for her mother. Manny rose and flung Kit with one arm across the room, shattering the picture window. A stirring show of strength, he thought. She collapsed onto a pile of glass on the ground. Then, stunned, but steady, she rose. A viper, coiled, welcoming a trigger to strike. Kit could not feel the wound, but could see it was bad. There was a shard of glass the size of a hatchet head sticking out of her hip. Blood soaked her jeans and pooled in her boot. She wasn't sure if she could walk, but Manny didn't know that yet. She had to get Charlie back before she bled out.
"She's not like us, Manny," Kit said, leaning on her strong leg. "She's good. She'd never hurt a soul."
Manny clicked his tongue.
"That's not what I heard. I heard she did a vicious thing. I heard she knows how to fight and win."
"You heard wrong," Kit said. "She'll never do your dirty work. Not like me."
"I already know her better than you do," he said.
He pulled Charlie close to him, his hand so tight around her arm that the skin where he held her dimpled and turned yellow.
"You had your chance. Now it's my turn."
"Now it's your turn to what?"
she cried, trembling.
"To rape her? To make her your slave? To take what's good in her and poison it?"
Kit took a step closer, a warm gush on her hip. She was dizzy and wouldn't last much longer.
"I wanted you. I cherished you,"
he said, furious.
"Everything you have, I gave you."
A thousand feelings, long unspoken, rose to the surface, gasping for air.
"You ruined me,"
she said, losing hold of herself. For a moment, she couldn't see through the tears or hear anything but her own crushing sobs.
"You should have let me starve,"
she said, and felt a bright anguish, fresh as a clean cut.
"Please just let her go." "There is no letting her go. I'm a part of her. She is me,"
he said, wild-eyed.
"Look at her."
He held Charlie by the jaws like a prize hound.
"She is us, kitty cat. You and me together. A miracle and a sin."
At this, Charlie began to cry. Manny took Charlie by the arm and shook her.
"Stop it. Stop crying."
Kit wiped away her own tears and looked hard at Charlie. There wasn't much time.
"Don't listen to him," she said. "You're my baby."
And as her mouth formed the word, the vibrations unlocked tremendous strength and vulnerability. At once, mother and child, shepherd and lamb.
"Always. But you belong to no one."
Manny seemed incensed by Kit's words, perhaps by their tenderness, or the love that would never belong to him. He rushed at Kit and clamped his hands around her throat.
"Shut up, shut up, shut up!"
In that instant, Charlie hoisted up the shotgun, its strap unhooked and dangling, and pointed it at Manny's head. She trembled, but her grip was strong. Her eyes were narrow and dark beneath her brow.
"See,"
he said, aiming those vivid blue eyes back at her like pistols.
"See that sleight of hand? That's my girl,"
he said. He let go of Kit's neck and she coughed and breathed deeply. He pinned Kit's hands behind her, twisting them up toward her shoulder blades. She struggled against him.
"Let her go, or I'll shoot,"
Charlie said.
"She'll do it too," Kit said. "Don't put that on her conscience, Manny. If you love her, let me go."
"You wouldn't shoot your dear old daddy, though, would you?"
Manny smiled a smile that had fed and clothed them, stolen countless hearts, gotten them out of trouble as soon as they had gotten in it. That smile, long and friendly, with a little mischief in the curl of his upper lip, had always worked. But it wouldn't work today. Charlie stared at him, panting, and checked the safety with her thumb.
I don't have a daddy, Charlie said, and clenched her eyes shut. Then she pulled the trigger. Silence. She hadn't pulled hard enough to release the round. Manny laughed and took a step toward her. She panicked and tried squeezing harder but lost her aim, stumbled backward, and fired a shot through the popcorn ceiling. She slid the gun to Kit just as Manny grabbed her.
You let her go,
Kit yelled, and staggered forward on her left leg, the other dragging behind her. A gush of blood from her hip kept time with her heart. Manny held Charlie up under her arms, her long legs dangling like a marionette's. Kit pointed her gun at Manny, but there was no shot without hitting Charlie. She would have to maim him. There should be three shells in there, but she might only get one chance to take him down. She aimed low and pulled off a round that peppered the meat of his calf with buckshot. Manny roared and dropped Charlie. With her target clear, Kit reloaded and fired a second round straight at his gut. There was no complexity to the moment, only action, swift and clean. Manny curled around the wound.
Run!
Kit screamed and aimed again at Manny. Charlie clambered to her feet and sprang for the door. Manny got to his knees and lunged at Kit. She aimed at his face, his ugliness laid bare as if his skin had peeled away from muscle and bone, and said a quiet goodbye. But before she could take the shot, he fell on her with his full weight, her head cracking on the floor, seeing white, stunned still. Her gun pinwheeled across the floor and out of reach. Before her vision cleared, he had his knees on her wrists down by her waist. She had never seen him like this, unhinged, wild, desperate, and needy. There was nothing she could do to overpower him, so she closed her eyes and let the calm roll in. Her heartbeat slowed. The sting of adrenaline subsided, and her muscle tone softened. She found Manny's eyes, blue as death, half hidden under his brow. As she went supple, he leaned down, as if to kiss her, weight shifting slightly off her right wrist, and for a moment loosened his hold. She quickly freed her hand and shoved her thumb in the wound in his abdomen, his flesh all hot, wet, and soft. He twisted away from the jab, and she rolled over and scrambled toward the door. Manny staggered toward her, crying. She had to glance away from him to see what she was looking for. The machete, its fresh edge glinting even in the dim light. Before she could grab it, Manny had her by the neck again, his huge hands pinching off her air. Had he seen it? He pressed his face, wet and rough, against hers and tried again to kiss her, his tongue groping, his teeth clashing against hers. He sucked the air from her, like he would snuff her out, and she felt an all-over dimming as her strength ran thin and she slipped out of herself. She noticed, strangely, the faded twist of lemon drops on his breath and his same old smell. The numbing like a drug now. Soporific. A call to rest. She could drift away. She could sleep and let go. Then she heard a sound as if broadcast from the end of a long corridor. Someone calling. A baby crying. The sound grew clearer, closer, the way an infant's cries would sound if you were running toward her in the night. As if dunked in icy water, she came to. Her face engorged, her hands prickled, Manny sucking on her, leech-like. She squinted, bracing, and bashed his forehead with hers, hard enough to ring her ears. He pulled back. Enough of a beat for her to snatch up the machete and slash.
A stripe opened up underneath his collarbone and filled with blood. He looked down at it, aghast, touched it with two fingers, and looked back at Kit. All rage again, he swiped a grisly paw at her. She recoiled and swung again, and the blade landed in his neck, stopping at bone. She held the machete there, Manny looking askance at the blade, gullies of blood spilling from his mouth, burbling around the steel. He uttered a strange, wet sound. He fumbled around for some invisible thing and passed his eyes over Kit, not seeing her. Then his legs gave way, and his body hit the floor. Kit dropped to her knees, shivering, sapped, and let the machete fall. She tried to call out for Charlie. Had she made it out? But even her voice had given up. She slumped to the side and rolled on her back, the popcorn ceiling like a level mass of clouds above her. As she sank out of consciousness, there was a sound from the darkness outside. A voice, small and scared, the sweetest she had ever heard.
Mama?
Then Charlie appeared in the dim light and knelt next to her mother. Kit opened her mouth, reaching for her daughter, longing to hold her. And again, no sound. As the room spun swiftly away from her, Kit thought, she's safe, she's safe, she's safe.